This is CKCU Literary News, bringing you the latest on literatures in Europe today. Here's your host, Hans-George Ruprecht.
With Friederike Knabe, our senior literary correspondent.
Good morning, Friederike.
Good morning, Hans.
It's the last show of the year.
And it's the 31st of December.
Well, that's amazing that we're doing it this very day. Now, let's look back. Let's look back 100 years ago. Why not?
Why not? Exactly. Now, that is a very crucial year, I would think.
Definitely. 1913, right?
Yeah.
1913, New Year's Eve, Arthur Schnitzler, the great Austrian writer, notes in his diary that he finished dictating his short story, Flucht in die Finsternis, Flight into Darkness.
Oh, that sounds ominous.
L'Appel des Ténèbres. It was later published in 1931. But I couldn't help but think about all that, what's happening now in the world.
Yes.
And we could have a long conversation about that, what's coming up at the end of this year and with maybe foreshadowing weeks and months to come. But we are here
to talk about literature.
Well, that's the point. Yeah.
And what happened this year?
It was
2013.
It was an amazing year.
It was a very good year for literature.
For Canada, for the world.
Yes.
And let's share, just remind us, of the great awards, the major prizes, which we found fascinating and which we have already discussed during earlier broadcasts.
Yeah, we start with the Nobel,
of course. Definitely.
Nobel of Literature for Alice Munro.
Yes.
And the Canadian author who everybody seems to agree really deserved it.
Yes. And my promise for the next year is one short story by Alice Munro per week.
I have the same promise.
Okay.
I just bought several books of hers
okay.
to do exactly that.
And by the end of next year, we will say what she did to us.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
Maybe we start writing short stories too.
We should. Now, the other major award is, of course, the Man Booker Prize for Eleanor Cotton. Mm-hmm. The Luminaries.
Yes.
We have discussed this.
Not a short story collection.
Not a short story collection, no.
It's one of the longest books ever to be awarded the Booker Prize.
And I think the prize could have been given to, equally with the same kind of prestige, to Jim Crace.
Yes.
For the novel Harvest. It could have been gone to, to Colin Tobin, mm-hmm. The
yes.
Testament of Mary,
yes. Yes.
Among others, right? Do you have other authors of finalists of the Booker Prize?
Well, there was the one and only African shortlisted author, first time ever an African
yeah.
shortlist.
Yumba.
No Violent Bulawayo.
Yes.
With We Need New Names.
Yes.
And she's moving along very nicely.
Yeah. And Yumba Lahiri. Huh?
Yes.
For the Lowlands.
So it
right.
was a very powerful list.
Yes. Now, I would like to recommend to you, the Miguel de Cervantes Prize, given to Elena Poniatowska. She is a politically engaged author, known for her account of the 1968 terrible massacre in Mexico. In fact, it is La Noche de Tlatelolco, published under the title Massacre in Mexico, 1968.
Mm-hmm.
But she has a long list of other publications.
Yeah.
I think it's well-deserved.
And that's an award for the work in general, not
that's
just for
right.
one book.
That's
okay.
right. That's, well, the Miguel de Cervantes is the equivalent of the Booker Prize
okay.
in the Spanish-speaking world.
Yes,
know?
Yes. Can I just add quickly the Booker Prize, which is called the American Booker Prize?
Yes.
Which I was not aware of. And
mm-hmm.
it's the Neustadt International Literature Prize that is
yes.
given every 2 years. And the choice for 2014 has been made in November. And it's been given to a Mozambican author
mm-hmm.
for his work in general. And that has sort of resulted in a lot more awareness about this author and his most recent book, The Tuner of Silences. Has just been translated with funding from the World Literary Movement. But it's a fascinating story. We can get into that later. But that's an interesting international award coming out of the U.S., Oklahoma.
Yeah. Well, we have, of course, the Prix Goncourt, and this year it was awarded to Pierre Lemaitre. A little bit of a surprise, but a very timely publication. Pierre Lemaitre is a crime novelist,
yeah.
A screenwriter, has been involved in the film industry in France, and he came out this year with a novel entitled Au revoir là-haut. So, see you up there.
Yeah.
Okay. So what's about? Why is this timely? It's a novel dealing with two veterans of the First World War. It's a French of the La Grande Guerre.
Yeah.
Who are surviving after the war in France, making kind of shady deals, earning a little extra here, a little extra there, and basically living a marginal life, criminal outcast. And the novel sheds light on that period after the war.
That is fascinating.
Fascinating, you know. And it's, of course, for the next year, the read.
Very relevant. Yes.
Very relevant, you know. Very and relevant. I'm wondering what will come out next year, given the historical context, you know,
yeah,
of
yeah.
The 100th year celebration of the First World War. Now, another important prize is the Nordic Council Literature Prize. This is given by a committee of representatives of the Northern European countries and the Nordic countries, right? And this year, the winner is the Norwegian-Danish novelist Kim Leine, for in English the title is The Prophets of Eternal Fjord.
Oh.
Yes. Now,
what is that about?
Well, I haven't read it yet because it's not available in English, but the title has been announced. But I found here the council's adjudication committee's motivation.
Mm-hmm.
And this reads, it's kind of fascinating to think about that within the European context. The quote is, a riveting epic about suppression and rebellion, an anti-colonial, widely sprawling work that fantasies over man as body and mind.
Mm.
Anti-colonial in Europe? What does it mean?
Yeah.
Well, it does mean a lot because it's a story taking place in the 17th century in Greenland, where the Danes had a major role to play as occupants, let's say. Now, this is something which connects perhaps with your reading about anti-colonial writing. You mentioned it earlier.
Yeah, Mio Kuto, the Mozambican who won the Neustadt Award.
Well, tell us more
and,
about that.
And it's a story which is it goes into magic realism, and to some point it's a story of a family, but it's set against the uncertainties of the Mozambican independence movement at the time. And it is really debating what is better, to stay with the traditions and withdraw into the countryside, and this main character wants to create a new world just for his family and a few people, and doesn't want to have anything to do with the modern world, with getting you know, independence is just not what he's interested in. He wants his own world. So it is political, but it's very subtle in its political message. It was a fascinating book to read. I was really happy to find that. It's one of those gems you come across by chance.
Yes. I would like to hear more about your top reads.
My top reads is
a little bit later, because we would like but just remind us of the German major books awards. We have discussed them earlier, but briefly, the most prestigious literary award is the Georg Büchner Prize, plus perhaps the German Book Prize, but the Georg Büchner Prize, we had an entire show devoted to this.
With Sibylle Levatscharoff.
That's right. Then we mentioned the German Book Prize awarded to Theresia Mora.
Yes, with Hungarian background.
Because the English would be the monster, in German das Ungeheuer. Then we didn't mention, because for lack of time, the Leipzig Book Prize. The Leipzig Book Fair is a major literary event in German-speaking countries because the concentration is on fiction, on literature, and less on other kind of publications, not yeah, like the Frankfurt yeah. Book Fair.
So I was just wondering how the difference. So that is more.
Yeah, that is. This is the focus. Yes. You know, so the book prize of the Leipzig Fair went to David Wagner for a book entitled Leben, Life, and I think for the English-speaking world, it is certainly an event that the prize for the literary translation was awarded to Eva Hesse's translation of Ezra Pound's The Cantus.
Mm-hmm.
This is a life achievement
yes.
of great magnitude, you know, I mean, to translate Pound's The Cantus.
But you know, Hans, I find it fascinating that we see now a number of prizes being given for translation, which
yes.
really shows that we're growing together in terms of appreciation of literature from different cultural background, language background, and we find the money to pay for the translation somehow, somewhere, which I think is going to be really, really important as we move into 2014 and beyond, because the world is getting smaller. So to be able to read literature in other languages and translation is going to be very, very important.
You sound optimistic, right? Because people are talking about the crisis of the book industry and of literature and so on, but you are very optimistic.
Well, can I give you a very small example I only came across yesterday? Otherwise, I would probably put this book on my top list as well. And that is, I was reading about an independent publisher in England who is publishing ebooks because he wants to make sure that books from other languages and other cultures are being circulated. And Africa is the big market for ebooks. A lot of the journals, a lot of the publication networks in Africa now publish ebooks. I mean, they obviously like to do print as well, but they have been able to really distribute a lot more literature by making ebooks available, and the first thing is to get people to read the literature that is available. And
mm-hmm.
I find it
mm-hmm.
fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And the new one, which is Hamish Ismailov, this book, which I just started reading, it's called The Underground. And is he himself is Uzbek refugee and now lives in England. He was in Russia for a long time, but he had to leave. And he's very well known, and people say he's one of the top Russian writers at the moment in exile. But the story is of a young boy who has a Russian mother and an African father, and he lives in the underground system in Moscow.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, tell us more about your best reads.
So, not knowing about how this story continues, my best top read, I have to say, in all regards, is a Canadian book by Canadian author Joseph Boyden.
Yes, I would share your view.
And he has written a most fantastic, amazing book. It took him quite a few years, but it is profound, it's provocative, it's relevant not only to Canada, but it talks about colonialism as well. It talks about the subtlety of influence of religion on cultures. And
you're talking about Joseph Boyden, the Orenda.
That's Joseph Boyden, the Orenda. And Orenda is a native word. It's a Huron word. And it means the spiritual unity and the spirit of a community, which is something that helped First Nations to survive and still does that today. And Boyden makes the very clear link between the struggles then and the struggles today that First Nations still have.
What happened in those days that we can now say it marked our country, that it made Canada what it is?
Well, I don't. There are different ways of interpreting that question. But
so it's, of course, pre-Confederation.
It is
pre-Confederation,
pre-existence of Canada, which
yes.
is already a provocative statement because many believe that Canada started with Confederation in 1867, which is a long time. What we're talking here is first contact in the 1640s. 30s and 40s. So it's a long time before then. And it is really making very, very clear that at the time there were very established, sophisticated societies living on the land which we now call Canada. And this particular one is set in Ontario and near the Lake Huron. Huron still, because the Huronians lived in that area. The first encounter was with French people and with the Jesuits priest who went out to proselytize, but also had to learn that there was culture, there was spirituality, very, very different societies that we're used to, but very sophisticated societies with well-organized system of representation, a democracy, the role of women, and it was very amazing. But that a lot of it has gone lost, because one had the Europeans who came had their own vision of what is civilization and did not have the awareness or the willingness to appreciate what was already there in terms of culture.
And civilization means governance, peace establishing, commercial relations, sharing things, respecting the environment, living in a totally different...
Educating the next generation.
Also, right.
Into the spirits and into a way of living, sharing resources, being careful about sharing resources, not wasting.
Tell me more about your understanding of this very concept of a community that is carrying along a spiritual tradition from one generation to another, thereby keeping it alive but also letting it evolve. What is this Yorenda concept doing to the people who shared it?
Well, I think that it creates community, but also the ancestors are still part of the spirit world.
Yes.
And of course, so have the animals have also spirits, and people have spirits, but then together they can have this joint community spirit. And it goes through the generations. Like when I first came to Canada, I heard the phrase, "We live for the seventh generation." So the seventh generation is never one that you will meet, however old you are. And the idea is that whatever you do in your world, because you have your ancestors with you, you always think for the seventh generation after yourselves. So you don't waste resources. You teach the next generation. You're sharing. You create, maintain the culture and evolve the culture as it goes. And in a way, they did manage to learn new things, of course. They learned to read, they learned to speak French, they learned to read and write. But it still kept that spiritual world with them. And one has to realize that those communities were 40,000 people living in a city. Now, that's about the size of European cities at the same time. And so we forget that. We think Europe was this sort of advanced society. But if you look at the years, European cities were not. There was also the Inquisition, and there was a lot of brutality going on in Europe. So that also spilled over into the world, in their world. And of course, the Europeans brought, without knowing it, disease into a country that didn't have any resistance to those diseases.
So. As if the very fact that things are repeating themselves, but they are also undergoing changes and variations, is a pattern of a universal nature, right?
Yes, absolutely.
I'm mentioning this because it reminds me of Camille Laurence, the winner of the Femina Prize in 2000. And her recent book is entitled Encore et Jamais, Variation. And I should say, I did an interview with the author. It's a fictional account of this very theme of repetition, but also with a focus on that what changes through the very act of redoing it, you know? So maybe, and she does, of course, look at the arts, at cultures, as mass culture, at music, at poetry, at painting, and so forth. But I think in this concept of the orenda, where the spiritual has been given from one generation to another through rituals, right?
Very much so.
With great respect, but always slightly altering, no? As if this were really the way cultures evolve and are kept alive, you know?
Along the way that human beings evolve. The genetic code is always changing slightly.
Friederike, you attended the Ottawa International Writers Festival.
Yes, I did.
So, who are the authors who struck
you? Yeah, of course, Joseph Boyden was at the Writers Festival.
Yes.
And
Margaret Atwood
was at the Writers Festival as well. We had a very interesting panel on short stories, which was Lynn Cody, who then won the Giller Prize.
Right, right.
And with two other short story writers. And I'm traditionally not a short story fan, but with all the African reading and now our commitment to read Alice Munro this year, I think I will be on top of short story writing another. Mm-hmm. But it was fascinating to actually learn more about how people write short stories and what goes into their thinking while mm-hmm. they're choosing short mm-hmm. stories. Mm-hmm. There's one African author that I would like to just mention to close, Chinelo Okparanta. She's written a book of short stories, Happiness Like Water. Chinelo Okparanta is from Nigeria, and she writes beautiful stories. They're very meaningful and they're very precise, and I hope that more people will read her stuff in 2014.
Friederike, I wish you all the best for a happy new year, and we'll be seeing again quite soon.
Thank you very much, Hans. The same to you.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
Bye. Before we go now, I should like to extend to all our listeners worldwide my warmest wishes for a new year filled with peace, good luck, and happiness.
That was CKCU Literary News, a regular program about literatures in Europe today, brought to you by CKCU FM 93.1. the community-based campus radio of Carleton University in Ottawa, Canada. We can be heard worldwide. Simply go to http://carleton.ca/litnews/ for streaming and podcast. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter under CKCU Lit News in one word. Thanks for listening.